Are we live? Is somebody on?
Hi, I'm on.
Okay, good.
Hello.
Hello.
Empower's here. Hi, guys. Welcome. Let's see who's here. Mary. Tom.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
How
Welcome.
Are you?
Good. Welcome. Thank you.
Thank
Shannon.
You.
John. John Holland?
Yes.
Al? Oh, hey, John.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Al? Patricia?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Pam?
Hello.
Hello. Pam, are you here? Nancy? And Lori.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Lori.
Hey.
Okay, so waiting on Mary, Shannon, Al, Pam, and Nancy. Hi, who just joined? Hello? Hello, who just joined?
This is Shannon. How are you?
I'm good. Jennifer Powers here. Welcome.
Thank you.
Just waiting on Mary, Al, Pam, and Nancy. Oh, sorry, Pam's here. Patricia, are you here?
Nancy.
Oh, Nancy's here. Great. Hi.
Hey.
Pam, are you here? Al and Mary. Okay. Well, thank you all for showing up on time, and welcome to our class. Now that I've taken roll for the most part, I'm going to start the recording on my end just to back up what CTA is doing. So if you hold on 1 second, I will ask you to have your workbook out. Did anyone not receive the workbook by email?
I have not received that.
All right. Who's I have not received that?
Mike Matheny.
Oh, Mike. Oh, sorry. I don't have you on my list. Welcome.
Well, yeah, we got tried to jump on last night. I don't know what happened. She just called me and told me to call in and get onto it now. Something was wrong with your website just last night. So I don't have a book flip.
That's okay. What's your email real quick?
Letter Y, letter I, dream at gmail.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to send you that. Does anyone else not have a workbook, or that I didn't call at roll time? Okay. All right, Mike, you got it. Are you in front of email, Mike?
I'm pulling it up right now.
Thank you, sir. Okay, great. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
All right, hopefully you're hydrated, you're in a comfortable place, not going to have any disruptions, right? This is Public Speaking to Build Your Biz. Star 6 is mute if you have noise in the background. We're going to be pretty interactive. One thing I do ask is that you guys share the mic. So there's 10 of us in the class, which is a decent size to be able to share the floor, if you will. So if you find yourself talking a lot or asking a lot of questions or answering my inquiries or getting coached, please be cognizant of that. And on the other side of the coin, don't be afraid to jump in and, you know, become a part, because you'll get out of this what you put into it. We're going to get a lot of questions answered for you, and the workbook is your guide to that. So we're going to jump right in. Let me just check. Is Al, Mary, or Pam? Oh, hi. Who just joined? Hello? I heard that. Did anyone else hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Mary. Oh, hi, Al. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll assume Mary and Pam will jump in. All right, so everyone has their workbook, and I'm going to set the recording. Un momento, por favor. Okay, welcome to Public Speaking to Build Your Biz, Part 1. This is Jennifer Powers. I will be your teacher and mentor coach through this process. I understand you all have your workbooks in front of you, pen in hand, and we are going to dive right in. So in this first part, you guys, we're going to cover quite a bit of information. You have that there in the first page of your worksheet. We're going to start by talking about how public speaking is such an amazing effort to build your clientele, to market your services, to share your message, and to create an additional revenue stream. And then we're going to go right into the topic and into the questions. This workbook is laid out in the form of questions. And so by the end of our two parts, you're going to have a completed workbook with pretty much a framework and some tools and an outline for your speech or presentation already done. So we're really going to cover a lot in this, and we're going to start with your personal goals. Why are you speaking? We're going to identify your ideal audience. We're going to look at different types of speaking opportunities, where you can start speaking, how you can, like, start honing those skills, some different opportunities there. You're going to choose a topic, a title, and a length for your talk. And then, like I said, we're going to have a very awesome exercise where you get to outline your actual, what I like to call your signature speech, so the speech that you will start with or really make your main offering. And then we'll look at filtering in different ways to keep the audience engaged, because that is, in today's speaking marketplace, a very desirable asset for speakers to have, is audience engagement. I'm hearing just some clicks on the line. If you're moving around or if your headphone is... So just say, can you star 6? Yeah, that right there. Just that. Okay. So let's jump in. Public speaking is by far, in my own personal experience, I've been speaking for 11 years now. I've been coaching for almost 11 years. So I started speaking just before I started coaching. And what I knew immediately was that they were going to be an incredible combination of services to offer. Why? Because first of all, coaching works with the individual one-on-one, and as the coach, you're doing more of the listening, less of the talking, right? And speaking sort of fills that other side of the coin, which is you're doing one-to-many, and you're doing more of the speaking, and they're doing more of the listening. So for me, that felt like balance, right? But more importantly, why it's such a wonderful fit is that one feeds the other. They are both supportive of generating business for the other, one being public speaking, one being coaching. So as a public speaker, one-to-many, if you're doing it right and speaking to your ideal audience, everyone in that audience gets to experience you, know, love, and trust you, and want more of you. And if you make it a point to let them know that you offer coaching, they are all potential clients, coaching clients in the future. And many people are surprised to hear that speaking is also a very good funnel for, coaching is also a very good funnel for your speaking. There are many occasions where I spoke at an event, there was someone from a large corporation, for example, Adidas, that's a company that's in my city. There was a woman in the audience, and sure enough, she hired me to coach her, executive coaching, worked with her as a coach. Over the course of 3, 4, 5 months, she enjoyed that experience so much, she brought me in to speak to her team at her organization. So it's kind of like, it's like the hand that feeds the other, that feeds the other, that feeds the other. It's this wonderful symbiosis. And again, if you're doing it right, and I'm going to make sure that you are by answering the most important questions, being in front of your target audience, one-to-many, presenting a topic that is supportive of them, solving the problem that you help them solve, is setting you apart from the competition at a rapid, rapid rate. You elevate yourself in the eyes of the people in the audience. Think of the last time that you saw someone speaking. At the end, maybe you saw them off the stage. What was the reaction of the people or of yourself to that person? What perspective did you have of that person, like when you saw them later or when you saw them up on the stage? What perspective of them did you have?
This is Shannon. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Patty, and then Shannon.
Yeah, I was just going to say it promotes them as some kind of an authority or an expert in what they're talking.
Yeah. Did you feel that? Did you feel that impression when you saw them?
Yes.
Yeah. Good, Shannon.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. It's something very interesting. I haven't quite figured it out, but I think it's probably something, I don't know, tribal or anthropological from our very beginnings, that when we see someone addressing a group of people, we immediately in our mind categorize them as an expert. I don't know what it is, and you know what? I don't question it, you guys, because that works just fine for us, doesn't it? So whatever that phenomena is, you want a piece of that. So you're building credibility, you're building visibility, you're building referral partners, buzz for yourself, you're accessing potential clients for your one-on-one coaching practice or other programs that you're offering. And then there's this other piece, which I happen to love, is that it creates an additional revenue stream. And I'll tell you from firsthand, it is a very good revenue stream. What I like about the combination of speaking and offering another service like coaching or consulting or whatever it is that sometimes in any given moment you might find a lull in your one-on-one services and then an increase in your speaking services. So one is sort of patching the whole of the other and then vice versa. So in any given time I might be able to say to you, you know, with a little bit of math, I might be able to say, well, right now in this quarter or this half of the year, I'm 70% coaching, 30% speaking. But it might flip, right, depending on the time of year. I mean, I might be like 50-50, where 50% of my time is coming from coaching and 50 is coming from revenue, from speaking. However, that's not true for revenue, because I will tell you that speaking is going to make you a lot more money, return on your investment of time, than coaching ever will, if we're just talking about time for money. You see what I'm saying? So that's what makes it such a nice complement to coaching. So for all those reasons and many more, which I don't want to spend too much time on this, hopefully you are beginning to see that this is a very worthy effort for you to pursue if indeed that feels it feels right for you. We're going to talk about how to hone your skills and some things you can do to make it feel more comfortable, right? But the idea is, if you're at all interested, I encourage you to challenge yourself to hone those skills, find those opportunities, and make this a go, because it really, really will give you a great return. Okay, questions or thoughts or additional reasons why speaking seems like a good idea for you? Let me just pause for a quick sec there, hear from you. Okay, good. We're going to move on to making this a little bit more personal for you. That's what all the questions, obviously, in this workbook are going to be geared towards you and what speaking means to you, what you want your speaking journey to look like. So I encourage you to really think about this. This document isn't something that is set in stone. You can always go back and make changes, and I encourage that. You might keep the PDF document and stash it away somewhere so that when you evolve into your speaking trajectory, you perhaps revisit some of these questions and answer them and look at how they've changed. The first thing we're going to look at is your particular goals. Why are you interested in speaking? And there could be one answer here, two answers. I mean, it could be one that encompasses everything. But I want you to really think about your objectives in speaking. Is it to build the credibility and visibility in front of large groups of your target audience? This, I consider you marketing yourself. It's making a name for yourself. If you're a coach or a consultant, you are the product, right? So you want people to have trust and belief and, to begin to build that relationship by getting in front of groups. It's a very good reason to want to begin speaking. You will also establish and maintain likability. There's credibility and visibility, but there's also something that I like to call likability, because you might be able to be up on the stage, but that doesn't mean you're likable, right? Again, that's marketing yourself. Then we have this opportunity that I didn't talk about in the beginning, but it is a really wonderful thing that I think a lot of people don't take into account, and that is the opportunity to showcase your skill set, your skills outside of speaking, your coaching, your consulting, or any other professional skills during your talk. And this is so brilliant, you guys. When you're offering a presentation, I don't care if it's 30 minutes long or an hour long or six-hour workshop, there is ample opportunity for you to let that audience see you demonstrate the skill set that they might employ you for outside of that talk. And when you do that, you are, one, reminding them that you're not just a speaker, but you're also a coach or whatever else you demonstrate. But two, they begin to see and get like a sample of what it is you do. Maybe they don't know what coaching is. So you show them, right? You market with an explanation of what you're about to do. You find a willing volunteer and get permission and then show them what coaching looks like and how powerful it can be. This is what creates a wonderful, powerful stream of clients into your into your practice when you can show them. So this is marketing yourself and your services, right? And then the final one is to market yourself and your services like the above, but also create a revenue stream that complements your whatever services you're doing. This is all the above, and you decide, or you're deciding now, that you want to make money at it as well. Is that a requirement? No. None of you need to be pursuing this as a revenue stream. There is so much to be gained by simply using it as a marketing tool. Okay, so I want to be clear there. If you don't feel comfortable or want to or need to charge for your speaking, you absolutely don't have to. Okay? All right, so let me pause here and hear from a couple of you. What are some of the goals, and maybe we missed one or two, that you would share what is true for you? Who wants to share? And you might be muted, so star 6 to unmute.
This is Mike Matheny. I think, if I'm catching what you're asking, I think my direction I'm aiming for is motivation and inspiration. But to be able to do that is to help light somebody's dreams on fire. To be able to, I guess, go back to what you were saying and start with the coaching. I've done quite a bit of speaking on stage in the past, and to throw the match out there to see what catches on fire, and then to listen to what they request, and then to be able to expand their dream and to be able to motivate them to go achieve that first steps of becoming what it is that's on fire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what I'm hearing you say, Mike, is that your goals, or the goal that you're talking about there, really takes the participant in mind. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I certainly hope that is not lost on this. I'm assuming that all of you, that the sort of default desire to begin with is to want to share a message to help people improve their lives or their relationships or their health or their business, whatever it is you want to speak about. That's sort of a given, and I'm so glad you said that, because I want to make sure that's not overlooked. So, yes, the goal to help other people reach their goals, yes. What are your personal goals besides that that might not include the benefit that the audience receives?
Just satisfaction, knowing that I personally have done something in the right way to, the fast way to clear it up is that, in a raw way of saying it, is basically I changed my kid's diapers coming into this world, and I want to be able to do so well that he changes mine on the way out. So I hate to say it that way, but it's a good way. It's how we teach others will give us the luxury of living our future.
Yeah, so true. So karmically, being
yes.
Karmically speaking, yeah, I get it. Thank you. Thanks, Mike. Who else?
I think it would help me with this, Pat. It would help me with self-confidence and just networking.
Yeah. So self-confidence in terms of what? Getting out and just being in front of people?
Getting out there, getting more self-confidence in myself as an expert, right?
Yeah. Good, absolutely. And then networking, say more about that.
Well, when you're out there, then you meet people. I mean, mm-hmm. And like you said, you gained a client, but also networks can lead to also other speaking engagements.
Yep. Okay, so building credibility and visibility, right?
Yeah.
So that can lead to more. Yeah, good. Good, good. One more? Well, one thing I want you to take away from this question is mostly, I mean, I would hope that credibility and visibility, if you're in this for marketing purposes, and likability, of course, is on your radar in terms of objectives. whether or not you showcase your coaching or your consulting or other professional skill set during the talk, I think it's a great best practice, but you don't need to do that. And if you want to charge, I think this question is really about, besides sharing your message with the world and using it as a marketing tool to build credibility, visibility, and likability, do you want to charge for it? So I would sort of, I would encourage you to decide in this moment what feels right for you now. Again, it might change in the future, but what feels right for you now? Because you're going to want that. You're going to want that information. Whether it's strictly marketing or whether you also want to supplement your income with it. Okay, moving on. The very first thing that we need to do, and a lot of people tend to skip over this, they just go right to who will have me talk. I'll talk anywhere as long as they have a pulse. That is fine in the beginning. However, you really want to begin as quickly as possible to reserve your time and your presentations for people that fit into your ideal audience. Why is that? Because if you're using it as a marketing tool, you want to get in front of the people that will ultimately be interested in your end service, and that is obviously your target audience for your coaching practice. So if I coach entrepreneurs to help them grow their business, then it wouldn't really behoove me to speak to a group of stay-at-home moms trying to find life balance. Now, it might in the beginning, right, because I do want to practice my speaking. I do want to run through my program once or twice. So I will give it to anyone with the pulse that's willing to listen. However, your goal is to really make sure you're getting in front of an ideal audience that fits in your target market. Does that make sense, you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So who is your ideal audience? You might consider the niche that you're currently marketing to or looking to serve in your coaching practice. Are they male? Are they female? Are they both? If it's both, what percentage are men? What percentage are women? Go ahead and fill that in. Could be 100% women, could be 100% men, could be 50-50. They're usually the most common answers. Sometimes you work in a niche that attracts a lot of women, that just happens to have a lot of women, but a few men, and that might be the case too. Again, this really requires you to know who your target audience is in your coaching practice so that you can define that here as your ideal audience. How old are they? What is the age range? This isn't, like, super, super important, but it's a good question to ask. Like, are they boomers? Are they seniors? Are they young professionals? Are they mid-career professionals in their 40s? Are they millennials? What are their ages? Zero to 99 isn't really an answer. I would prefer that you are more specific in terms of really thinking about your ideal client. And even if you used one person, even if you looked at one of your most recent coaching clients that was just ideal, that you want to attract more and more of that person, how old was that person? You can use that as a guideline. If they had a profession, and they may not, your audience might be profession generic, but if they did, what would their profession be? You have a couple options there. Some people work with financial advisors. They coach or consult with financial advisors. Some people are, they coach authors or restaurateurs. Some, like I said, coach stay-at-home moms. That's a profession. So what is their profession? Interests are important because it's important to think about, not so much for your marketing, although you could be used in marketing, but this is going to be used a little bit later for when you think about content, when you think, for your speech, when you think about how you choose the blog posts that you write about or where you market your services or advertise. Interests is it's a good question to answer about your target audience at many levels. But in terms of speaking, it's mostly to use in terms of, like, the content they use. So, obviously, like, if I go to speak to a group of youth advocates that work with youth at risk, I'm probably not going to talk about, you know, use examples or stories that have to do with, like, business. You know what I mean? They're not interested in that. They're interested in anything that has to do with empowering young people or self-improvement, right? Maybe work-life balance, but probably not business or finances. You know what I mean? Versus entrepreneurs, their interest might be marketing or finances or social media, that sort of thing. Okay. Then you have socioeconomic class. This is semi-important, I'd say, just because you want to know many things. This will help you understand the language that you use in your speech. This will help you understand how you dress, how you show up, right? This will help you understand the different examples or stories that you share in your content. You want to know who you're speaking to. I remember very early on in my speaking career, I was asked to go speak, do the keynote at a it was a water drillers. This really exists. Water Drillers Association. There's an association for everything, right? Well, these were water drillers, and sure enough, I showed up. Back then, I used to wear suits. I can't even believe I wore a suit, but at all, let alone to the Water Driller Association meeting. It was a sea of flannel shirts. I mean, the place smelled like a bar. Everyone was drunk. I had a heckler. I mean, I was overdressed. My hair was big. I mean, they were all men. It was a hideous swing and a miss. So I'm not saying they're low, middle, or upper middle. I'm just saying, like, take into account your audience, dress appropriately, bring the right message, right? Prepare yourself for who you're working with. So knowing their profession, knowing their interests, their socioeconomic class is kind of important. Okay, so let me stop and hear from one of you what you have here in terms of the sketch of your ideal audience. You all should have filled out these at some point or some level. Who wants to share?
Mike here. I think one of the areas that I enjoy working, because I can't really define, as listening to you, what my marketing direction would be or whom I'm going to become. But one of the things that I like to do is I like to go in and speak at a lot of the network companies. You know, and there's a gazillion of them all across the country now. But there's a lot of hungry people in the world that just, they're afraid of the word no. They're afraid of hearing somebody shun them when they're just trying to figure out how to do something so that they can achieve something, right? So that's an area that I enjoy working is network marketing, speaking in the network marketing industry. And obviously, interests are definitely with entrepreneurs, a variety of businesses. It really doesn't matter what business it is, as long as you believe in it.
And are they men or women, or both?
Both, 50-50. And age groups I really like to enjoy working with is people around, 27, you start thinking about figuring life out, and 30, you start really starting to want a substantial future. You're looking for it. And, 50-year-olds, they're in the grind, but they're starting to ease up. And so I like to work basically with the 30 to 50-year-olds.
Yeah, good. It's also really important to sort of drill down the age. Not that you're only going to speak to that group, but you know what you're after and the sweet spot that you like. And you also are able to say, as you start to craft your speech, and we'll do that in just a little bit, and you start to fill in anecdotes and stories and whatnot, if you're talking to a group of 30-year-olds, you're certainly not going to make a Brady Bunch reference. Am I right? If you're talking to millennials, you're going to have a very different, you're definitely going to make an iPod joke or something, or an iPhone joke, but with baby boomers, it's going to be a very different set of stories or anecdotes or references. So I really encourage you to get as clear as you can, because, you know, the universal law, like, the more clear we are with who we want to get in front of, the more the universe can conspire to help us get there. So clarity can be a really wonderful thing, and your audience, knowing your audience is the first step. Okay. Good. Any questions on that before we move on?
This is Mary.
Yes.
And I...
Okay, I think we lost Mary. So we'll wait till she comes back. Other questions or comments? Okay, let me just pause to check while we're waiting. Is Pam here? And yeah, Pam, you're here, right? Okay. Okay. So we'll wait for Mary to come back. In the meantime, I want to start to introduce where, this is the big question, right? People have all the time. Where, oh, where do I begin to speak? What are the opportunities out there for me to talk? Now, I want to differentiate between the two types of speaking opportunities. We're not going to spend time on it, and it's not on your worksheet. Mary?
Yes, that's me.
Yes, we lost you. So
I need a new headset.
Oh, okay. What was your question?
One of my passions is working with, I've been working in the construction industry for over 28 years. It's a very interesting and complex industry. There's a lot of stress and tension, like other places, like, you know, if you work in the banking world and things. But from personal experience, I want to try to work with kind of encouraging or a little bit of information, you know, like from personal experience and inspiration about how it's bad to become a workaholic.
Yeah.
It's very unhealthy.
Yep.
As you get older and you start to have health issues due to being a workaholic.
Okay. Mary,
I'm
going to jump in because you're just jumping ahead a little bit, and that's really around topics. So I'm going to ask you to shelf that if that's
okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
But we're getting there. we're getting there. We're getting there. So you know who you're talking to, though, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I want my target, I belong to a couple of women's organizations, but I want to include men because it's not just women.
Right. Good. Perfect. Okay. So before we get to the topic that you're going to talk about, we have to begin to look at where you are speaking. Oh, yeah. So I was saying, I want to differentiate first between the differences, the two different types of events that you might speak at. One is what I call a public event, and the other is a private event. A public event is one that is open to the public, hence the name, and that is an event that you or someone else and you put on, organized from beginning, middle, and end. In other words, you rent the space, you market, you collect the fees, you set up the audiovisual, you show up, you greet, you register, you speak, right? And then you clean up, you order the Danish, the coffee, all of that. So that's a public event that you put on and it's open to the public versus a private event that is already going on. It's already organized. Someone else is already managing the place, the food, the audiovisual, everything. All you do is show up to speak. These are organized events that either companies or organizations are already holding, and you just show up to speak. That's a private event. It's not open to the public. It's open to the private community that that group represents, okay? We are not going to be focusing on public events, and that is by design. I believe you are, most of you, me included, are not meeting planners. We are coaches and speakers, and we just want to show up and speak. If you ever want to put on a public event, go for it. Just know that there are a lot of moving parts and you have to wear a lot of hats. And it could be very stressful, but it can be also prosperous if you, or profitable if you, you know, enjoy doing all that, that work. But in this class, we're going to be talking about private events, those that are already going on that you show up and speak to. And there are many. Did you know that in any metropolitan area across the United States, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, there are a minimum of 100 speaking opportunities in that metropolitan area? There is no shortage of opportunities to get in front of groups of people. Now, I want you to consider, because we're going to go down this list, and this list I actually like to look at as a ladder, if you will, but as we go down the list, we're going up the ladder. I want you to think about where you are on the speaking, we'll call it experience/confidence ladder. In other words, if you've never gotten in front of a group before, or maybe you did it once or twice, you're probably at that first level, and we're starting at service clubs. That's where I started. When I hadn't spoke to, I mean, anybody ever, I just started saying, I'm a speaker, and I wanted to start speaking, so I started at the service club level. If you have some experience, you've already been there, did that, done it, and maybe you're somewhere up into, like, the business referral groups or the nonprofit groups, right? That's very possible. So it doesn't matter where you are. You just have to self-identify, right? So, like, right now for me, I'm at industry association conferences, right? I should add in there also there's another level that I just included myself in, which is award banquets or, you know, dinner banquets. That's where I am. So it wouldn't pay me to go down the ladder to service clubs or community church groups. You see what I mean? But if you're just starting, you certainly don't want to put the pressure of yourself to talk at a company or corporate meeting. You know what I mean? You see what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's start. I'm going to talk just a little bit about each of these because I want you to understand the vast, there's just this list of opportunities for you to speak at. And again, take into account where you are on the ladder. So service groups like Kiwanis, Rotary, and Zantra, these are all service organizations. They are desperate for speakers. They typically meet once a week, sometimes once a month. There's at least 3 or 4 of these in your immediate neighborhood and community. All you have to do is Google them, Google the name and your city or town, and you will find that they have weekly or monthly meetings, and every single one of them has a speaker. They're usually not picky, but they don't have a budget. They're the best groups to get in front of in terms of testing out your content. They're a beautiful patient group. They are varied in gender and age and profession and socioeconomic, right? So you might not be hitting exactly your target market, but it's a great place to get your feet wet and to test out some material, okay? I'm sure there's more service clubs, but these are the top three that you can start with. From there or alongside of there, however you want to look at it, there's community and church groups that are aplenty. I say community, like neighborhood association or, I mean, anything that is in your neighborhood, a playhouse or a church that has gatherings that require someone to bring a message to. There are many. You know, Meetup comes to mind. Some people, they want to speak. They want to practice speaking. They create their own Meetup group, meetup.com, if you're not familiar with it. That's a community type, that's a community level group. Typically, again, not a lot of money or no money. However, a great place to find warm, welcoming people that you can get your feet wet in the speaking, get confidence on the speaking platform in front of the room, and test out your material. When I say test out the material, what I mean is get comfortable saying it, right? And then observing the audience reaction to your stories, to your message, to your jokes, right, to the activities. It's both. It's you getting comfortable and them giving you sort of inadvertent feedback. Or actual feedback. You know, when you hand out feedback forms in Kiwanis or Rotary or your church groups or community groups, hand out feedback forms. Sit down with two or three of them and ask them, so what did you think? What did you like a lot? What do you think I need to change? These are perfect groups to do that. Again, no money, perhaps not in your target audience, but you're getting your feet wet here. Moving up the ladder, the Chamber of Commerce, this is good. It was a very, very good move for me. Very welcoming, more business-oriented. However, they're also community-oriented, so it's sort of like right in the middle. They also have a women's chamber option, too, if indeed your ideal audience is women. Many chambers of commerce have women chapters. So the chamber is basically there to support the local businesses, right? So if your target audience is small business owners, that would be a great place to go, right? Or anything having to do with business or community or environment or, you know, politics of some sort. Chamber of Commerce is all of that under the umbrella. A little bit of money, it's like none to a little. Maybe there's some. I was a member of a really, really award-winning Chamber of Commerce in Salem, Oregon, and it was very profitable for me in terms of marketing myself through my speaking, and I did make some money. I did get paid for some events as well. Moving up from there, you have educational institutions like community colleges, high schools, PTA meetings, in-service trainings. Educational institutions are different, as you know, from corporate institutions because they're just different. I'm not going to go into why and how, but you get it. Community colleges, there's a lot of community colleges that offer classes you can teach. I mean, anything from yoga to metal shop, right, to I don't know, how to be amazing. There's just a lot of great community college classes. You can teach one of them. High schools, they have assemblies, right, if that's your target audience. They also have teacher workshops. There's PTA meetings if parents are your target audience. In-service trainings for either the administration of the education institute or the teachers. So money, for sure, not a lot, but you can definitely expect to get paid at this level. Then you're moving into business referral groups or networking events. Some of them are international. Some of them are just local. It's the gamut. I've given you a couple of examples there. What I recommend is you Google the word business networking and the name of your city and state and see all of the opportunities. Visit them free. Don't join them. Visit them to see if it's a good fit, and what you want to know if it's a good fit for speaking is who's in the audience. Is that either a group that fits in your target audience, in your ideal audience, or are they good potential referral partners? So one example is I spoke at a group of the Society of Government Meeting Planners. Government meeting planners, they're not going to hire me to coach them, right? But you know what they're going to hire me to do? Speak at their government events, which happens to be a good target of mine. I like working for government, both coaching and speaking. So I spoke to them because at their networking event because it just made sense, right? They have events that they're going to be scheduling speakers for. So if, for example, your niche is financial advisors, do you know that there's a networking group for financial advisors. There's networking groups for accountants. There's networking groups for nurses. I mean, go find those networking events. Or just go to your general networking, business networking, and treat it like it's, I'm just going to try this on. I'm going to see how this content feels. But go to the event, see if it's a good fit, if it's worth your time and investment. Then you ask someone who the program director is, or whoever on the board is responsible for scheduling speakers, if indeed they have one. I'm assuming they do. And then tell them what you have, what you speak on, and tell them that you believe it's a great fit for this audience and why, and then ask them when you can get on their speaking roster. So attend the meeting first. If they have a speaker and it looks like a good group for you to either practice with or actually make it a go, go. Chances are they may have a little bit of money. Some of the larger ones might, but what they'll usually do, you can barter or trade for either membership, right, or they'll give you a rubber chicken dinner or buy you something, or they'll give you like a gift certificate or something. For those type of events, and we'll talk about fees later, I think in part two, for those type of events, I like to ask for what's called an honorarium, because they can pretty much justify, they'll say, we don't have a budget for a speaker, and you'll say, well, I would appreciate an honorarium of whatever amount you see fit or that fits within your budget. So that's a good one to use for them. All right, I would say the next step up, and this is like the second part, so like if service clubs, community church, and chamber of commerce, educational institutions, and referral groups, if that was one level, I would say the next level is nonprofits, direct sales, company, corporate, and industry associations. This is where the money starts, right? Nonprofit groups, they have conferences, they have meetings, they have retreats. They don't have a ton of money, but that's why they're at the bottom of this second group. But they do have money, and they do need speakers. Direct sales teams and meetings, something like what Mike was saying, you know, if they're in network marketing, you know, I've spoken to many Mary Kay's, Arbonne's, like these local directors of sales, they have groups that they want to motivate and inspire and educate, and so they have a budget for that. Then you're moving up to companies or corporate meetings. You know, real estate agencies are great in the local community. You have, obviously, hospitals or, I don't know, any kind of business. You pick it, throw a stone, hit a business. They probably have a need for a speaker or trainer or brown bag lunch presentation, right? Law firms, use your imagination and, obviously, refer to your ideal audience description. And then you move up probably to the top, which I would consider the top in terms of money, because companies and corporate meetings, obviously they have money. So do industry association conferences. They are very, very used to paying good money for speakers and breakouts. And breakout, you all know what that is. That's, you know, not the main stage speaker for a keynote or an opening or a closing, but it's the three or four options that they have in between, right, where they're like an hour to an hour and a half long. More educational than inspirational breakouts are. And so, like I said, there's an association for pretty much everything. So depending on your target audience, figure out that association, hit them up, call them up, email them, tell them what you offer, and ask them when their local meeting is, can you come visit, what can you do to get on their speaking roster. All right, let me pause. I've done a lot of talking. What questions do you have about this? Questions or comments, please?
Hi, this is Pat.
Jennifer.
Starting simple and working up to company and corporate meetings or industry conferences. That's,
mm-hmm.
Yep.
That feels good to you, Pat?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, good. Where do you fall in this? Would you say your starting point is the service club? Because I want you all to, like, identify where that is. Like, put a check mark next to it. Where are you on this ladder? Where would you feel comfortable, Pat?
I think community groups and maybe small women's networking groups.
Yeah, good.
That's where I think I feel comfortable starting.
Excellent. And let me show you, let me tell you what happens, why it begins to, it gets very easy from that point. When you pick your starting point, what inevitably happens is all those people, they come to see you, you give them a good experience because you've honed your skills, which we're going to talk about next. You give them a good experience, they know they can trust you, they go back to their corners of the world, and they talk about you. And they go, oh my gosh, we saw this, I just saw this great speaker, her name was Pat. And yeah, she was so great, and I think we need to have her. Or they're sitting around a meeting, and they're going, oh, we need a speaker for our retreat in September. Who's got, oh, my God, I saw a great speaker. His name was Tom. He was awesome. We should bring him in. He talks on this and this. That is what you do to start referral-based business, mm-hmm. and it is the best. So start at that community level. I'm telling you, you cannot go wrong if you start at that community level. It's a fantastic, easy, breezy way to get referral business for your speaking. You got to be good, though. You can't suck. Okay? You can't suck. You got to be kind of good for people to want to talk about you, but you will be because you're going to do your the work to make sure of that.
Jennifer, can you hear me?
Else? Yeah. Yeah, who's that?
It's Tom.
Hi, Tom.
So developing a feedback form sounds great. What about developing a lead form? So let's say I'm doing a talk and, you know, as I wind, you know, as I bring the talk to a close, that I have lead forms for individuals to fill out if they were interested in continuing the conversation
totally.
In the future.
Totally. Yes. So when we talk about how to enroll clients, the before, during, and after, we're going to talk about that.
Okay.
In that time, and if you notice in my sample feedback form at the end of this workbook, you'll see that there is an opportunity for them to check that box and say, yes, I want to continue the conversation. I'm interested in learning more. So it serves as both. Yeah,
good.
But we'll talk about additional ways. Yeah. Good.
This is Mike here. One more thing that I've learned in the past that helps people, especially when you're getting ready to get started and, you know, get out there and try to, you know, shake your juice and not get knocked off your pillar, is one of the things I do when I get done at the end is I was taught never to ask, what do you think, but to ask, what did you like best? Because we're always going to be prepared to take on the positive, and what never gets answered, it's pretty relevant what you're not good at, and so nobody needs to speak that. You just got to pay attention to what you do, and people will actually answer in a positive way the best parts of what they like best about what you do, so therefore you can hone in and start going in that direction versus going home and beating yourself up for the negative. So just a thought.
Good. That'll probably come more into play when we talk about how to wrap up a presentation or a speech. I think that's going to come in handy. Good. Okay.
Jennifer?
Yes. Go ahead.
I've had experience speaking with industry associations at the chapter level, regional level, and also national workshops and presentations. I'm comfortable in front of 600 people presenting awards and speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Shock. I used to be a wallflower. But I noticed that under company and corporate meetings, you listed hospice. I mean, is it okay to broaden yourself? Not, you know, like with coaching, you're supposed to, quote, unquote, pick a niche, like a specialty, but it's a niche. Can you open yourself up a little bit? Because, I mean, hospice has a close spot in my heart.
Hospice is in there so that you guys can see that it's not just the corporate, right? There can be a lot of, like, heartfelt opportunities that are still corporate. They're still company. Hospice makes a lot of money, and they have a lot of money to spend. But if that also hits a special spot in your heart, absolutely. Look, there's no limit, especially if you're going – let me answer it this way. If you're going out to just use speaking as a marketing tool and you speak to people that are in hospice or hospice workers and your target market for your coaching that you want to market your services for is accountants, you're missing the mark. However,
right.
If you want to speak to hospice and you want to do it for money, do it all day long. Doesn't matter. Get paid. Take the money. Run. Or if you want to just do good in the world, and it doesn't matter whether it's marketing or money or anything, you just love those people and you think they're awesome and you want to honor them, go do that. You're the boss,
okay.
I'm the boss.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Good. Okay. So this is giving you some snapshot of what's possible. Hopefully all of you have put a check mark next to the place where you can start. That doesn't mean you wouldn't go, you know, lower. If you, let's say you're comfortable starting at the Chamber of Commerce level. It doesn't mean you don't have a new program or presentation that you're like, I'm not too sure if I want to put this out to the big dogs yet. I want to go practice on my Rotary Club. Do that. That's fine. But just know that as you go up the ladder, you get more potential pay. It's higher fees. And they do have a higher expectation of the speaker as well, as you can imagine. Okay. Good, good, good. So, like I said, you can't suck, right? That is, like, number one rule. If you're really going to make this a go, you've got to treat it like a skill set that you are willing to sharpen. So there's a lot of different ways that you can do that. You may already be doing some of these. These aren't in any particular order. However, these are all methods that I've used that I highly recommend. First of all, if you haven't checked out your local Toastmasters meeting, I cannot emphasize that enough. It is a group dedicated, it is an international group. It is nonprofit, and it's dedicated to helping you become a better, more comfortable speaker. It is phenomenal. It's been around for ages. I was a Toastmaster for a couple years. I wouldn't change it for the world. It taught me most of the mechanics of speaking that I still carry with me today. So there's a lot of them in your local community, a lot. Find one that works well for your schedule. When you find one that works well for your schedule and geographically is convenient, visit, okay, go as a guest. They'll welcome you with open arms. And get a feel, like how does it feel? Because everyone has a different culture and dynamic. So you want to just, before you land on one and you join, if you're interested in joining, figure out which local chapter is a good fit for you. Like some are more political, some are more social, some are like by the book. So just get a feel. You'll know. Who's a Toastmaster in here?
I am. I went through it. I can remember years ago when I first started out, there were 13 speeches that you had to give in order to get a diploma for the first phase.
That's right. Yes, there are. It's still that way. Is that Al?
Yes.
Hi, Al. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's still, I think, that many. And they're all, like, what, 3 minutes long, or three and a half minutes long, something like that. But each one of the speeches focuses on a different element of speaking. And then people in the audience, your fellow Toastmasters, are giving you critiques, very kind, generous, thoughtful, sweet, and constructive critiques of your presentation. So you really, you get better exponentially. Good.
And you need to make your words kind and sweet because you're going to get your turn.
That's right. That's right. Deliver it with a soft hand. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true. All right, so Toastmasters, I challenge you all immediately to look up a chapter and visit. Just visit. Big deal. Just go visit. Okay. Next, I recommend you study the art of speaking. You can read a book. You can attend a class. Oh, my gosh, YouTube has a ton, right? I mean, there's a lot of books and materials and resources on speaking. I took a community college class because it was old school then. I took a public speaking class. Just felt right. It worked for me. I liked it a lot, and I learned a lot. It got me in front of another group of people other than Toastmasters. There's books. I give you a few books there. A lot of books on public speaking. When I talk about the art of speaking, I mean that's different than the business of speaking, right? The art of speaking is, like, how you craft a speech, how you deliver your speech, how you tell a story, how you end, how you open, like, these, how you transition, these sort of things. Getting comfortable in front of an audience, that sort of thing. So be resourceful and be a student of the art of speaking. As a continuation of that, you can go one-on-one and hire a speaking coach. I think it's a great idea. Not a lot of people do this because it can tend to be spendy, but you'll want someone, if you are hiring them to help you with your delivery, you'll want someone in your community or someone that you can Skype with. I think it's better to do it in person in the community, but that's me. There's speaking coaches everywhere. Not a speech coach, that's different. A speaking coach, someone who is a skilled public speaker who coaches other people to build their skills. Okay? That's usually one-on-one. The National Speakers Association, again, phenomenal success I had as a member of NSA. I mean, I owe a lot of my knowledge, a lot of my success to the people and to the programs that NSA put on. There's a local chapter for you, I'm sure, near or far. There's one in your community somewhere. Even if you have to travel a distance, it's worth it. NSASpeaker.com. They do focus on the art of speaking. There is some work that they do, but the NSA is mostly, it's the Association for Speakers, obviously, so they're mostly about the business of speaking. So I listed it here because they do have opportunities to hone your speaking skills, but it's also, and I would say the majority, mostly building a speaking business or the speaking part of your business. They have monthly meetings that are, I would say, probably 70% dedicated to the business of speaking and marketing, 30% to the art of speaking. So you're going to get it, right? I went through something called a fast-track program. It was a two-year program that taught you both the business of speaking and the art of speaking. We practice our stories. We practice our openings. We practice telling jokes. But we also practice how to market ourselves. And they taught us, you know, how to write a synopsis. And, I mean, most of the stuff that I'm teaching you here came from my years of work with NSA. Okay, that's it. I think it's great to model behavior that you enjoy seeing in other speakers, so watch them whenever you can. Go see them live if possible. And I don't mean like Tony Robbins. You mean, sure, you can do that. But there's a lot of local speakers and conferences or events that you can go to. But, you know, go with the idea of looking and watching the speaker as a speaker and see what you like and what you don't like, what you want to do and what you want to make sure not to do. Speak a lot. I think this is probably the best advice I ever got. When you think you're speaking enough, speak some more, and then always ask for feedback, because as hard as it is to hear, that is how you get better. So that's what I was saying earlier. When you go to your Rotary, you go to your Zonta, I mean, like, just go to these groups and just jump in. Deliver your speech, even if it's not perfect. Like, those places are more forgiving. And you might even gather a group of people. I've been a guest at countless speakers in the community because, you know, I'm in that community of speakers, so they call upon me. But what they do is they get their program together and they want to deliver it to a corporate group or whatever, but they haven't yet because they want to dry run it. So they invite like 5 or 10 of their favorite, most trusted colleagues or family members, right, friends. They get a room somewhere, a little conference room somewhere, and, you know, they provide a few refreshments, whatever, nothing fancy, and they run through their talk. And then they have a specific feedback form or discussion to give feedback to that person. So it's sort of a mock. I mean, it's a, what do you call that, a controlled environment and a staged, you know, presentation with the idea of getting feedback. Very powerful. You can do it in your living room, you know. As long as if you have a PowerPoint, you just need some ability to show them that. If there's no PowerPoint, no PowerPoint. Okay, so speak a lot. A lot, a lot. You want to get comfortable with your talk. I cannot emphasize enough video recording yourself. It's just, I mean, every speech I did with Toastmasters, I was obsessive, but it was, I think it was the best thing I could have done. I recorded my talk just before I went. I recorded it again. I recorded it a third time. Did it start to feel canned? Yes, so don't go overboard, right? But what you want to do is recording yourself helps you see some of the little things that you might not catch if you're not looking at yourself, right? Things like speech patterns. Like your where your eyes are going, how you're making eye contact. You can treat the camera like an audience member. Any obnoxious body movements. I used to like to watch it on fast forward just to see if I had like those chicken arms, which I did, you know, like where the elbows are like pegged to the sides and you're just like wailing your forearms around. When you fast forward, you can start to see some things that, you know, touching your hair, things like this. So video recording is super easy right now with all the equipment that's available to us on our phones. No reason not to record yourself. Prop that up and click record. Other things that you've been considering doing or comments on or questions on the above list. Let me hear from you. A quiet bunch. Okay, I'm going to forge forward. I feel like I'm talking a lot, but there's room for you guys to ask questions if you have any.
Jennifer, before you go on, just to back up to, where to give your speeches.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was jumping around on some of the adult education catalogs in my town, but also within a decent driving distance, and noticing that when I would get to the personal development piece of their catalog, there really wasn't much about coaching. It was mostly life insurance, mutual funds, real estate, yoga, meditation, mindfulness. But really, there was an absence. There was a real gap or a void in anything that sounded like coaching, connecting with passion and purpose, or, you know, setting measurable goals or getting the most out of life or money coaching or anything like that. And sort of was seeing that as an opportunity to, one, get out there, you know, and they do pay you not much, maybe $20, $30 an hour, but then also an opportunity to, one, practice, two, become, you know, more competent in what I'm doing, but then also to try to develop a client pool. Try to develop people to work with.
Absolutely. It's a great place to start. And obviously, it's a good point you bring up. Is this Tom?
It is. Sorry. Yes, it's Tom.
That's okay. It's a good point you bring up that just because you are a coach doesn't mean you'll speak on coaching. But what you will do is speak on the topic, like you're saying, that you help, that you typically coach people in. So if it's finding passion and purpose or finding financial abundance or you know, pursuing your dreams or whatever that is, that's what you talk on, right? And you might employ some coaching skills in the talk to demonstrate that which you do. But you're typically not going to be talking about coaching. I just want to make that clear. I mean, unless you want to, if you're a great coach and that's a passion of yours, you want to teach people how to coach, do that. But that's more hard skills than inspirational. So, and then the
second
thing... Yeah. The second thing is that's a great place to go. Trying to think where that would fall under. Probably community groups because it's not – unless it's a community college educational institution. Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, because this is Mary. I think with community colleges, sometimes they're always looking for a little bit of change up or an addition to their adult education courses.
Yeah.
It may only be like a one session or two or three sessions, but, you know, and it could be almost anything, you know, being comfortable speaking, you know, in front of people.
Yes.
I mean, it could be almost anything. So it would never hurt to reach out to your local community college to see if they're looking to, you know, add something different to their adult education.
Oh, that's what I wanted to. Yeah, Good, Mary. Yeah, that's good. What Tom was saying is the fact that there isn't anything there is actually a good sign to me because there's a gap.
Yeah.
There's a gap to fill.
Yep.
Yeah, good.
There's
good.
A need.
Thanks.
There's a need there.
Yeah. Good, good, good. Okay, so that brings us to, which is a good segue, to bring us to what kind of talk do you want to give? We talked about inspirational, and we talked about educational, or you can call it informational. A talk can be both. A talk can just be one. So when I talk about my keynote speech, my signature talk is O Shift. It's about the book that I wrote, O Shift. It's really inspirational. It's not so informational. It's definitely 95% inspiration, probably 5% informational. However, when I give my coaching conversations talk, which isn't a keynote, it's more like a workshop or a breakout, it's highly informational and very, very little inspiration. It would probably be the reverse, 95% informational, 5% inspirational, right? Because I'm giving them hard tools. I'm giving them, we're working on skill sets, communication tools. That's very informational. Sure. Will they get a little inspired to ask open-ended questions and active listen? Yeah, probably. But they're going to walk away with information. So what is, if you were to begin, and I'm asking you to begin to think about this talk that you want to give, and this is one talk, and if you could only talk about one thing or if you could bring one talk on a desert island, what would it be? This is the talk I want you to answer the following questions about. What percentage is inspirational, and what percentage is informational? Go ahead and fill that out. It's not rocket science. Just you just want to know, sort of, you want to start to get a very blurry picture of how the content's going to look, right, in terms of inspiration or information. Okay, so moving on, I want you to, again, start to get that blurry picture just a little bit clearer. And think about the topic, I encourage you to think of a topic, that you're super comfortable talking about and that addresses the needs of the target audience. And one thing I want to ask you to do to answer that question is, if I asked any one of you right now, any one of you, to stand up and talk for 7 minutes extemporaneously about a topic that you are passionate about, a topic that you're so comfortable with that you don't even need preparation, what would that topic be for you if you had to stand up right now and spontaneously speak for 7 minutes on it? What is that topic? When you think about that, I want you to think how you might apply it to your target audience. Let me give you an example. One gal in one of my classes said, I could talk all day long about gardening. Horticulture, gardening, whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. Who's your target audience? She said, business people. I said, how can you blend those two? And at first she didn't see how that was possible at all until she started applying her gardening skills, passion, and knowledge to leadership and how she started to make the connection of planting a seed in building relationships and the importance of watering that and tending to it, right? And then watching it grow and nurturing it, right? And then celebrating it, right? Reaping the rewards, right? So it was like this really beautiful keynote she put together that everything to do with this topic that she's really comfortable talking about. But she made it to where it addressed her target audience. Now, does she have to know a little bit something about business professionals? Yeah, she does. She does. And she did know about business professionals. But she also knew a lot about gardening. And that the combination of that passion for gardening and the knowledge of the business world was phenomenal. So I'm not saying yours is going to be, like, perfectly fit like that. But I'm just saying don't discount something that you really are, maybe you love cars, or maybe you love travel, or maybe you fly planes, or maybe you rock climb, or, I don't know, scale mountains. How does that apply to the work that, or the needs of your target audience? How might you blend those? Maybe they're two in the same. Maybe you're super comfortable talking about communication and body language, and your target audience happens to need stellar communication skills, right? And they can benefit from that. So what are you super comfortable talking about and addresses the needs of your target audience? What topic is that? Who wants to share?
This is Mike. One of the things that I've been passionate about, and I've studied it for quite some time and watched it being taught, and just watched the response of people. And I come to find out that no matter where you go, whatever audience you're in front of, the one topic that is a winner in all aspects is personal development. And to be able to identify when I'm talking to people, who am I talking to, you know? And I'm sure most of you on this phone might have heard of Dr. Robert Rome, Personalities, the DISC system. I know that Coach and Compass teaches it. I've tutored under Dr. Robert Rome for, it's like 6 years, and I've gone off and I've done a lot of the talking about it, and it's always such an inspirational moment when you're able to tell people, whether help them identify what a D looks like, or an I, or an S, or a C, and watch how they respond. And then you become, it's fun because then you get to teach them to become a contortionist and mimic whom you're talking to. And to mimic whom you're talking to makes them comfortable in themselves. So that's what I'm excited about.
That's great. So that's an example of a tool that you are very comfortable using, that you believe in, that you're passionate about, that you can obviously fit to address the needs of your target audience, for sure. Perfect example. Thanks, Mike. That's great. So with this topic in mind, you know, the jury's out whether or not you title your speech or your presentation after you've written it or before. I personally find inspiration in titles. When I wrote O-Shift, I found the title way before I even put a word on the page. So that's the way I roll, which is why title is in this order. However, if you're someone that's like, I have no idea what the title is, I need to write the thing first, then save this part for later. But what I don't want to get lost on the importance of a sexy title. I say sexy, I don't mean sex. I mean just a catchy, awesome, sexy title. Because sometimes a title will be the only thing that that meeting planner or program coordinator, whoever is asking you to speak, gets or remembers, right? So there's a list of examples here of ways that you can craft a title when indeed you're ready. I'm not going to go through all of them here, but you can see some of the different angles you can take. Three easy steps to communicating with impact. You know, you can give them the outcome. Or three tips to yada yada. You know, you can pose a question. I think questions are great because assumptively you're going to be answering them in the presentation. Well, there's a list here. Again, I'm not going to go over them, but think about the title that is going to spark interest. Titles are tough. I'm going to be honest. It is not my favorite thing to do. I'm not great at it. However, I do like coaching people around it once I get something to work with. There's a great book. Let me see if this is – yeah. So there's a couple of links there for you to click on. Pop, that book there that I recommend, is a really good one for titles by Sam Horn. She's an NSA member and a really great author. So I recommend that book. Okay, we're not going to spend time on titles today because that might be something you can, you know, sort of wordsmith and brainstorm later. But does anyone have a title that they just love and they want to share right here, right now?
This is Mary. While we were sitting here, you know, we were sitting here listening to you go over things, something that popped into my mind, I'm not sure why, but it said, can you say no?
Yeah, great. Now, the thing about a title, no, so for example, can you say no? is the question, and it piques my interest. I feel like some of those might require a subtitle. So it's like, can you say no? Three ways to get what you want by saying you don't. I don't know. Just making it up now. But you see what I'm saying? Like, I feel like there something like that title would need a subtitle descriptive. So, for example, O Shift, right? O Shift. That was as good as a standalone, but what is it really saying? How to change your life, right, with a little F and Shift. So I know that that's what I'm going to be learning in or being inspired to do in that talk, right? So some of these, and there's some examples here, two words you'll never forget. Like, what? I don't know. About what? So, yeah, you might need some. And that sounds like an example of one, Mary. Can you say no?
I mean, yeah, maybe depending it's just, on, like, you know, a lot of people can't say no. They have overflowing plates and...
Yeah. Yeah, like an over, you know, can you say no, an over committer's guide to freedom or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Just something. And a lot of books do that. You know, they have a title and then they give the subtitle. Speeches often require the same thing. Okay, good, good, good. Moving right along at a fast clip here. The very first thing you want to do before you, well, it's not the first thing. It's just something you want to do in order to get real clear on your offering is to understand how long the original version of your talk will be. So we're going to talk about length here. The industry has changed a bit. Before, keynotes and like singular presentations were 45 minutes to an hour. They've now moved to an hour to 90 minutes. I sometimes get an hour and 75-minute requests. I've never heard of something so absurd. It's so funny because as we become more difficult to engage because we have so many distractions with, you know, the phones and the Twitter and stuff, the keynote requests are getting longer. I don't know what that's about, but I would say that a typical speech length, presentation length, is about an hour at this point. An hour and 15 minutes for an audience of any size seems like a long time for one singular speech. It's not a workshop. Workshops, of course, can be much longer. It could be days, a day long. But one singular speech is about 60 minutes to 90 minutes. Okay? So how long do you want your version of your speech will be? That doesn't mean that that's all you'll that's the only length you will have, because what we're going to do is apply the accordion method, and that's what I call expanding and contracting that original version to fit meeting planners or organizers' schedule, because they will have, you'll have a situation where your original version is 60 minutes long, but then a meeting planner comes up and calls you up and says, can you speak? Yes. What's the topic? Oh, it's a good fit. Okay, I got a 45-minute time slot. And you're like, oh. Okay, good. I know how to do that. I got that. So I want you to consider how much shorter you want the original version to be and how much longer you're willing to be, because you're going to offer this. You're going to offer your speech in different versions. So you'll say something like, my presentation can be customized to fit 45 minutes, 60 minutes, or 90 minutes. Or maybe you just say, it's 60 minutes long, period, end of story. Like, you could do that too. So take a second. What's the original version of your speech? It could be 30 minutes. A lot of people do 30-minute presentations. And then they have other versions that are maybe 45 minutes and or maybe 30 minutes and an hour. Please don't skip these steps. These are questions that I'm asking you for a reason. And, again, it's not in stone, but definitely write in an answer. Okay. When we get to content, you're going to see that the accordion method is very easy to apply when you're looking at the elements of your outline. So, for example, if I have a 60-minute long basic version, original version of my speech, which I do. And then someone says, we need you for an hour and 15. I go, okay, no problem. I'll just add in this additional story and this additional audience exercise interaction. And if they say, oh, we only have 45 minutes, I'll say, no problem. I will take out that story and I will offer less audience interaction in this section, right? If they say I have an hour and a half or whatever, I'll go, okay, I'll add this story in and I'll add this audience interaction and I will include a Q&A in the latter 15 minutes. You see? So it's lots of very, very easy ways to add elements and remove them to expand and contract the time. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Questions about that time? Length? Okay. Let's get into the meat of your talk. You thought about a topic, like, you know, you got a general understanding of whether you wanted to be inspirational, informational. It started to get a little clearer about the topic. You considered a sexy title. Maybe you saved it till later. You know how long this original version will be. You know your ideal target audience and what they're dealing with, the challenges that they need help with. I want you to answer this question. What exactly do you want your audience to walk away knowing, learning, understanding, or adopting as a result of hearing you speak? What exactly do you want your audience to walk away with? So after hearing my talk, I want my audience to understand that they have the power of choice every single day. I want my audience to believe that they can have it all. I want my audience to challenge themselves to follow their passion. I want my audience to learn that words are powerful. I want my audience to feel prosperous and abundant. I want my audience, and I wouldn't go with feel, I want my audience to know that prosperity and abundance is theirs, right? I want my audience to understand how to ask a powerful question. I want my audience to learn how to listen, breathe, and make eye contact as three powerful conversation tools, whatever, right? So what do you want your audience to know? Think of it this way. If I was standing in the back of the room after you got done talking and everyone was exiting the room, I could grab any random person and ask them, so what did Tom talk about in there? And that person should be able to easily and quickly and readily answer that question. Oh, he told us how to, or he told us that we need to, blah, 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 right? So what is that thing, that one single message, that one thing you want your audience to know, learn, understand, or adopt? Who's got it?
This is Shannon. After hearing my talk, I want my audience to realize the importance of a life balance and know where to start to be the best version of themselves.
Good. Okay, Shannon. Excellent. Thank you. 2 minutes. I hear two messages. What's that?
I just wrote it down super fast. So.
Okay. Yeah, I hear two messages, and I'm glad that you – is it okay if I coach you on this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I hear life balance, and I hear best version of themselves. Pick a lane.
But I think they're one and the same.
Pick one.
I mean, I guess I feel like I like the term life balance. I feel like it's obtuse and it's a little overused, and people aren't quite sure what it means. So I guess I would go with best version of themselves because that's clearer.
Perfect. Good. It's important that you pick one because there's going to be a phrase that pays. There's going to be something that you're going to say more than once, more than three times, maybe five or six times in your talk, if it's like an hour long, that you want it to stick. You want it to be sticky. So if you give them two, then it's watered down. So what's that one phrase that pays? You get to live the best version of yourself, or you get to be. Is that? Would that be it?
Yeah. I mean, any of those work.
All right. So say the sentence again. After hearing my talk, I want my audience to
be the best version of themselves. Mm-hmm. Realize the best version of themselves.
Yeah. Okay, can I continue to coach you on that? Because this is very
interesting. Absolutely.
I don't know in an hour. I don't know you very well at all. I don't think I've ever met you. Therefore, I cannot say this with certainty, but I'm pretty sure that you can't get a whole room of people to be the best version of themselves in 60 or 90 minutes. Or to even come to real... Right? Okay, good. So you want it to be powerful but realistic, right? So notice B
Go ahead.
Yeah, notice B, you don't want them walking away being. It's, you want them walking away knowing, learning, understanding, or adopting some sort of belief, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it did. I gave this speech last week. And the idea behind the talk that I give is what a life in balance looks like, what happens when you're out of balance. And I target stay-at-home moms who have lost their identity and don't know how to balance. They put themselves last for everything. So after those two things, what does it look like? What happens when we're out of balance? And then easy, tiny steps for your mind, body, soul that you can take to get back in balance. So I use balance a lot, and I don't know if it just sometimes doesn't resonate with me because I think I use it a lot, so it's trying to find a different phrase.
It could be that it resonates with you a lot, which happens so often when we speak about something frequently that we take it for granted.
Right.
I know I do. And the things that I say. And then people are like, oh, my God, that was so helpful. I'm like, what? Are you kidding? That's, like, so basic. You know, it's like, no, it was really good. But I'm saying to myself, oh, my God, if I say this one more time, I'm going to, like, stick needles in my eyes.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just so so
but
given.
I also get attached to phrasing. I'm a writer, too, so I get attached to phrasing. And some of the hardest thing you can do is be like, I think that's so great, and it's not serving a purpose for anybody else. And so to allow yourself to remove it from –
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just putting out there, and look, you can do it any way you want. And I'm just putting out there that you can, what you want your audience to do, you guys, is to feel smart. You always want your audience to feel smart. And the way you help them feel smart is let them know where you're going, where you're taking them, right? What the message is and, like, the unfolding of it. So it's sort of like you don't want them confused at the end, and they won't feel smart. They'll feel really smart when they walk out and they can answer my question, what'd you talk about in there? If that person, if you've done your job right, that person should confidently say, oh, she told us that life balance is possible, and she showed us three ways to maintain it or to access it. Right, period, boom, end of story. Oh, good, what were the three ways? If you did your job really well, they should be able to say the three ways. Boom, 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 right? So I want to make sure you guys aren't clouding, because what happens is a lot of us, me included in the beginning, we dump a whole bunch in there, right, a whole bunch of wants that we want to share, and then it gets so watery and so there's no form or structure or rhyme or reason, and the people walk out and go, oh, it's good. Well, what'd they talk about? Oh, a lot of things.
Yeah.
A lot of things. You know what I mean? So that's all. Okay, good. Who else has one? Real quick.
I have one, but I think you're going to want to narrow it down.
Okay, is that Mary?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay,
Mary.
Let me ask from someone I haven't heard from. I haven't heard from Tom, John,
oh, I'm
Al,
sorry.
Pat. That's okay. Pam, Nancy, Lori.
Because I know I can always email you. But Lori or someone needs to speak up. Just talk. It helps with speaking in front of other people.
Hey, this is Pat.
Jennifer,
go ahead,
I
Pat.
Have two.
All right.
Okay. No, Pat, and then is that Tom or John?
It is Tom.
All right. Pat, then Tom. Go ahead, Pat, real quick.
Okay. So after hearing my talk, I want my audience to understand they can not only survive but thrive after adversity.
Boom. Perfecto. Nailed it. Good one, Pat. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Tom, what do you got?
The other one I have is the menu's so big, make a choice.
That sounds like a title. That sounds like a title.
What I want them to understand is that they have the opportunity to make the best choice.
Yeah.
And I want to know what.
Good.
I want to know what's on the menu.
Yeah, me too. Is lasagna on there?
There you go.
Tom.
Oh, lasagna. Yeah.
Tom, what do you got?
So if I was going to speak on a topic that I felt really comfortable with and something I've experienced with, it would sound something like through people, process, and outcomes, school change is possible. Like, that's
school
something
change.
I would be comfortable with. Yeah.
Good. Good. And then after hearing my talk, I want my audience to
identify the people to move their schools, understand the processes that are necessary, and keeping their outcomes in mind.
So that what? When they do all those things, what will they do? What will they understand or know or learn?
That school change is possible.
Okay. So I want my audience to know or believe that school change is possible. And then, Tom, perfect segue, those three things. Tom, do you mind if I use you as a coaching subject here?
No, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, let's do it. So after hearing my talk, I want my audience to know that school change is possible. Who's your target audience?
Probably teachers and administrators.
Yep, assuming. Okay. So now, Tom, and this is for everyone. I'm coaching Tom, but I'm group coaching everyone. If that is what you want your audience to know, what are three supporting points or three steps or three tips that fortify the objectives? You've already said them. I just need you to repeat them. What were those three things that
identifying the key people to move your school, mm-hmm. knowing and following the processes that are needed for school change, mm-hmm. and identifying mm-hmm. your outcomes.
Yeah. Good. All right. Identify outcomes. Let me ask you this. Do they need to be in any particular order? And if so, is that the order that you would put them in?
I would put outcomes first because I would try to link outcomes to purpose. Like, what's the purpose of your organization? You know, are you an elementary school, a middle school, a high school? What's the purpose?
Okay.
And let that.
Okay, so identify outcomes first. What would go second?
What processes do you need in place to reach that outcome?
Got it. And then the third is identify the people to move to work the processes, right?
To work the skill and will. Like, who has the skill and who has the will to step up and meet that standard?
Good. Tom, would you call these tips, steps? I don't know, secrets? What would you call them?
So that's the fuzzy part because I start feeling more like a consultant than a coach. And if I'm a coach, then they would be, I wouldn't want to hijack.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Okay, people, let's take a pause. I'm assuming most of you are coaches, if not all of you are coaches on this call. You, when you're on the speaking platform, you are putting your coaching hat on the coat rack. You are not a coach.
Right.
When you're on the speaking platform, you might step out of the speaker role and step into the coaching role for a moment with permission from someone like I just did here. I'm a coach, but I'm teaching you guys something here tonight. But I stepped out of that for a second and said, Tom, do you mind if I coach you on this? Right?
Right.
Did you see it? Yeah. You're going to do the same thing. When you're up there, you are not a coach. You are an expert in this topic. An expert, or you have experience in it, or you simply have passion about it. You have knowledge, experience, or passion. And you either have all three or one, doesn't matter. But you've got it. So you're a speaker here. So with that said, are they tips, tricks, steps, keystones, what?
I guess it would be tips, because it would be based on my experience.
Okay.
And my knowledge Good. Base.
Yep. So, listen, just listen to this. Listen how easy this gets. If Tom does his job right, I grab someone from the back of the room walking out, and I go, hey, what did Tom teach you in there? And they go, oh, he told us that, you know, school change is possible. Oh, really? Like, how did he do that? And he goes, oh, well, he told us these three things, like identify the outcome, know the process, and then work the process. Or find the people. I don't like using identify again. Find the people to work the process. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. Have a good day. Boom!
There you go.
Should be that easy. It should be that easy. Now, we're going to take it a step further. For those of you who are following along, I hope you are answering that question for yourself. What is the one thing you want your audience to know, believe, think, trust, whatever? What are three supporting points or steps that will help them get there? So, for example, the woman who had life balance. I think it was Pat. Pat, was it you?
Shannon.
No. Shannon, yeah,
Shannon.
Life balance.
Yeah.
What are three ways that, what was the thing you want your people to do, your audience to?
To implement self-care easily into their life to bring it back into balance.
Yes. So I would imagine you're going to have three tips or steps or something, best practices, for them to walk away with to bring their life back into balance, right? Good.
Yep.
Okay. Pat, what was yours? Tell me again. Pat, you're muted. Pat's not here. Okay. You're getting the point. Now, that was points 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
Now, go ahead, Pat.
I was trying to unmute my line, and I've got
That's okay.
Fingers.
Go ahead.
Okay, so it was understand that you can not only survive but thrive after adversity, and I have three things. Recognize what you can control, recognize the awful, and celebrate your future.
Recognize what you can control, recognize the awful.
Uh-huh.
And what was the third one?
Celebrate your future.
Celebrate your future. Okay. I'm a little stuck on recognize the awful, but
well,
you're the expert.
After something happens that's really bad, you have to recognize that it was bad. And
should
then,
that be first?
Well, maybe so, yeah.
Yeah,
and then
maybe that's first.
Well, recognize what you can
control.
And then celebrate your, or celebrate, you know, moving forward.
Yes, is third. Good, good. See how, like, order is important. So you might, like, dump it all on the page and then say, okay, what order does this go in? And the reason I'm asking you guys, is it tips, is it steps, is because, you know, that might start to formulate a title or a subtitle. Or it might show up in your synopsis that we write in part two, right? So just, like, food for thought. All right. Once you have those three main ideas, you need to support those ideas. So each of your 1, 2, and 3 ideas, in Tom's case, you know, identify outcomes, know the process, find people to work the process. Tom, you need to spend time explaining what that means, right? So a little bit of, you know, appropriate ideas that give them an understanding of what you mean by identify the outcome, right? Then you want to give, like, a story. It could be personal. It could be of a client. It could be of a relative or a colleague. Maybe an anecdote or a statistic, right? You want to backfill with information that supports your supporting point, right? So what can you think of? A story or a statistic or an anecdote right now, Tom, that would convince me that identifying an outcome is a really good idea.
Yes, I could tell a story about a school I worked with that 10 years ago had 1,800 discipline referrals, and there's only 180 school days. But we really don't have 180 school days, because if you take a week out for standardized testing, to take another 6 days out for field trips and school events, you knock off the first 4 days of school because everyone's getting acclimated to the new process. that really, you know, that school was doing 15, 16, maybe 17 discipline referrals a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you say each discipline referral is you're trading time for discipline, and that time is focused on student learning, focused on building teachers' capacity.
Okay. So by identifying outcomes, you could be more productive, right, in how you go about the business or the scheduling or whatever it is. Okay. So that is a story you can start. You can say the number one thing, the very first thing that I can recommend that you do to believe that school change is possible, to create school change in your own world, is you must identify the outcome. Let me tell you a story. Such and such school back in 2003 had 1,800 discipline, right? Boom. That's a story. Yeah. Then maybe you're like, okay, depending on how much time you need to fill in, you might be like, let me ask you a question, audience interaction. Raise your hand if you've ever identified an outcome and were successful in meeting that outcome. Raise your hand. Okay. Great. Joe, you grabbed the person. You just grabbed the person whose hand just shot up in the air. This is super fast. Sir, yes, your name, Joe. Okay, Joe. Tell me, what was the outcome? Oh, we wanted to meet blah, 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 such and such absences. Okay, great. How did identifying the outcome help you reach that outcome? Well, what we did was blah, blah, blah. Boom, audience interaction supporting your point. It's so easy. All you need to do, or you could say statistic. Did you know that 92% of outcomes, if identified, are met versus 22% that aren't. Well, making that. But you need to have a statistical data, right? You get the point, though. You are fortifying your supporting point. That's your goal.
Right. Right. You can say, did you know that a national survey showed that teacher burnout is a teachers account discipline as the number one reason why they leave the profession or why they feel burnt out or unsatisfied.
So long as it speaks to, wherever you use that statistic, so long as it speaks to the point that you're trying to persuade them about, that identifying an outcome is really going to help them create school change. You see what I'm saying? It's got to support, or else now you're just, okay, good, 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 good. And because you want your audience to feel smart, you got to connect the dots for them. Right? So any random statistic, so you say the statistic, and so you can see how it proves that identifying the outcome, right, blah, 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 will help you create school change. School change is possible. That's your phrase that pays, Tom. So you're constantly, in every point, in every one of your 3 points, you're feeding back school change. School change is possible. This contributes to school change. Right? Okay. You guys do this for 3 parts. This is the body of your speech. This is the body. You guys know every speech has an opening, a body, and a closing, right? If you didn't, you know now. Now, I want to just pause so we can time chunk the speech. And what that means is deciding how much the body, how much time you're going to spend in the body of the speech. And it's very easy. Watch how we do this. I'm on the next page. The original version is, Tom, how long was the original version of your speech?
60 minutes.
60 minutes. Okay. In a 60-minute talk, for a 60-minute talk, chances are you're going to spend very little on the intro and the, typically you're going to spend very little on the intro and the outro. A little bit more time on the intro than on the closing, but overall, most of the time is spent on the body. So an introduction for a 60-minute talk is typically 5, maximum 7 minutes. Let's say 5 minutes on the intro, Tom. The conclusion, very quick, and I'll show you what that looks like in a second, but let's say 3 minutes on the conclusion, okay? That's 8 minutes. If your talk is 60 minutes long, how much time do you have for the body, the 3 points and supporting info?
52 minutes.
Very good. 52 minutes. However, you're a smart speaker, and you know that you don't want to. You'd rather underplan than overplan, especially if you're including audience interaction. Therefore, you're going to call it at 48 minutes because you want to give yourself some leeway. You never want to go over. Bad practice. So 48 minutes, right? Because you're smart. 48 minutes for your body. If you have 3 points, how much time do you have to spend on each point?
Well, approximately, if I have 48 minutes, then I'm going to be spending, I don't know, 15 minutes, 16 minutes on each point.
16 minutes, yep, 15, 16 minutes on each point. So now you go back to your 3 supporting points. You're like, okay, identify outcomes. I need to talk about 15 minutes on this. That will help you understand how much content, how many exercises, how many stories, how many anecdotes you need to pack in there to backfill to fill 15 minutes. You see what I'm saying?
Right, I do.
Okay.
I'm writing that down.
Good. So you need 15 minutes worth. Now, again, you're not writing them out. This is an outline. You're just writing in enough in those lines there. You might write, for example, identify outcomes. Tell story about school in 2008. Share statistic about blah, 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 teacher burnout. Ask audience, yada, yada, get feedback, coach someone. That could be 15 minutes right there.
Right.
And you do that for your 3 points. Okay. Then you have to move. You're moving on because you're writing in your outline only. You're not writing this speech out verbatim. You need to write your intro. Toastmasters will teach you typical standard form. You tell them what you're going to tell them. Then you tell them. And then you tell them what you told them. So you, in the intro, you tell them what you're going to tell them. Today we're going to talk. I'm going to share with you 3 powerful ways, so three ways that you can begin to create change in your school so that you walk away understanding that change is possible or whatever. I'm going to talk to you about today. Did you know, you can start saying, did you know that as challenging as it is to create change in schools, it's happening every day, even as we speak?
Right.
School change is possible. It requires tenacity, determination, a little bit of education, and a lot of cooperation. Whatever. I'm going to talk to you about a few of the challenges of creating change in school, but I'm also going to teach you, most important, you teach you 3 ways that you can create school change with ease and grace in your own community. I don't know, whatever. Okay? So that's your intro. Short. It could be a story that you start with. Maybe you start the overall thing with a story, but it's got to speak to school change. It's got to have a powerful impact about school change. And then you tell them, I'm going to show you how to do what Bob's school did, whatever.
Right.
And then you go into your, now you're making your audience feel smart, right? Because they know where they're at. They know that where they're going. They know what they're in for. Yeah. And then you show them. You give them the 3. And then at the end, you write your conclusion. You tell them what you just told them. So we covered a lot today. We looked at the challenges of creating change in schools. I shared with you how you can identify outcomes, how you can implement processes and find the right people to work those processes. And now you have everything you need to go out and begin to implement change in your own educational system. This is possible for you. I believe in your ability to create school change, right? So it's like this inspiring, quick, dirty conclusion, easy breezy.
Right. And if you don't think you could do it, here's my contact information.
Yes, 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 and I'm happy to coach you right through that when you stumble. Yes, good.
Yes.
Now, side note, it's very important that you create an outline so you don't sound like a canned speech, but I will tell you that a good practice is to nail your introduction and nail your closing, because that introduction, you have about a minute to a minute and a half for those people to decide whether or not they're going to listen to you. You don't want to be stumbling and fumbling, so you want to nail that down, practically verbatim. And then you want to nail the conclusion to leave them with confidence right at the very end. But everything in between, just an outline. Okay. Questions about that really quick. You're welcome. Thank you. Questions. This is for you to do maybe when we hang up the phone, right? It's going to take some time, but you'll be so glad when you have a general outline. Everything we've done this evening is working up to have you prepared to do this outline.
And this call is recorded, so if we want to go back and re-listen to parts of it or all of it, we can.
Forever and ever. Yep.
Very good. Good.
Yes. Okay. As you're filling in those, you know, the backfilling with appropriate ideas, stories, anecdotes, and statistics, I was saying earlier the industry norm is to keep your presentation dynamic and interactive. People have short attention spans. They want to be a part of the process. They want to be an active member and participant in the learning. So there are many different types of ways to interact with the audience. And I strongly recommend that you incorporate these because they really make for a dynamic talk. Now, I've given you some here. I've used all of these. You can use one of them, two of them, three of them. You can ask, you can use one of them in your first point, another one in your second point, a third, you know, a different one in your third point, or you can do one of them each in one of your 3 points. Let's look at them. Asking an audience a question. You know, they say an audience really should be doing something every 7 minutes. You should be engaging your audience at least every 7 minutes. And it can be as simple as raise your hand if that's them doing something, right? You can ask them a rhetorical question. You can have them stand up, tell their partner, do something, fill out something on the handout that you gave them, right? But think about every 7 minutes, which in this case is about twice in every point, right, in Tom's example, about twice in every one of his 3 supporting points. So asking the audience a question, whether it's rhetorical or close-ended, is a very good, you can start your talk with that. I do that. My opening line is, I want to start with a question, true or false. All day long, no matter who you are, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, shift happens. And they go, true. Right? So, and then I go on, right? But that's my beginning. It's a rhetorical question. I'm engaging them from the very, very start, the very first minute. Okay. On stage activities, audiences love this. They can't get enough of it. They want to be in the spotlight. Bring them up. Role play. Make sure you're not calling on them without their permission. Say, who wants to come up on stage and help me out with an exercise, right? And then grab the most excited person. Break them out in dyads or triads and pairs. Tell your partner a story about, or listen to your partner for 30 seconds and use this technique, or right? So that's a great way to get, you know, sort of like fluff the feathers a little bit and to take the attention away from you and put it onto them. Again, moving them. Some people like their audiences to do like the Zumba. I personally hate that, but whatevs. I don't make my audiences dance, but I might make them stand up and, I don't know, move around and find someone with a certain something in common. I don't do a whole lot of that, but I know speakers that do them very successfully. You know, follow your intuition and, like, what feels right for you. Again, individual exercises on a handout. Handouts are great. We'll talk about them in session 2. But just like fill in the blanks are great for learning, especially for kinesthetic learners. Like I was talking about earlier, working one-on-one, if you want to coach someone, like raise your hand if you've ever felt frustrated by whatever it is you're talking about. And then 17 people raise their hand. You grab the one that's the most excited about raising their hand. You say, what's your name, Sue? Okay, Sue, can I? You raised your hand pretty quickly. Sounds like you've been frustrated by yada yada before. Is that right? Yes. Can I coach you around that? Yes. So you ask permission. You show that. Maybe you're a healer. Maybe you want to demonstrate muscle memory technique or something. It's a fabulous way to showcase your skills. And then, of course, a Q&A session. So one thing I will say about Q&A, never, ever, ever end with Q&A. Because you always want to end with you being the person that says the last words, the most inspirational closing that you've planned, so that you can get that applause, and then you walk off the stage. So if you have Q&A, you do it after your 3 points, and you say, I'll pause here for questions, because you have time, and then you go into your closing, and then you end and leave the speaking platform, okay? So choose the ones here that feel instinctively comfortable to you. Don't do, like, don't get people up and move in if that doesn't feel like a good thing for you. But if, like, having them fill out something on a handout feels good, or if you want to, you know, bring someone up on stage and do an interactive, if that feels fun to you, do that. If it doesn't, don't. If Q&A makes you scared out of your pants, please don't do Q&A, right? But if you love answering questions, then make sure that's the part. All right, so I offer these here because keeping your talk dynamic is going to be important. Your audiences have short attention spans and mobile devices that they can direct their attention to. But also, food for thought for you to be backfilling with some of these, you know, activities and stories. These are the things, the audience interaction is the thing that you will accordion to contract and, you know, and expand your time. So, for example, you might do an onstage activity when you have an hour and a half, but if someone asks you to do an hour or an hour and 15 minutes, you wipe out the stage onstage activity with the, you know what I'm saying? These are the things that are fluff. They're not at all fluff, but they're stuff that you can still get your message across, but when time doesn't permit, you can get rid of. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good, good, good. What questions do you have about those audience interaction opportunities?
Jennifer, this is Mary. Sometimes I've seen speakers use PowerPoint, you know, behind them that, you know, kind of served as, you know, like key things to keep the audience attention.
Definitely.
But would also have, like, some humor to them. And
yeah.
I had an example, and, you know, I lost it, but it was like it was directly connected to that part of your speaking, but
yeah.
It had some humor to it.
Yeah. So a visual aid like PowerPoint is perfectly fine so long as it does have a purpose, and the purpose should not be to guide you along so that you know where you are in the speech. That it shouldn't be something you read from ever. PowerPoint is becoming more and more, as the trend goes on, more and more visual, so there's more images that complement what you're saying, not words that complement, and video. Video is being used to, you know, as one of your anecdotes or stories. You can use a YouTube video in your presentation. A lot of people are doing that. But what we're getting away from now is using it as sort of a crutch. And I'm a person that doesn't use PowerPoint by default, especially, I mean, when I'm giving my keynote, I never use PowerPoint. When I'm teaching coaching, I think PowerPoint can be helpful because it is a visual aid and some people learn that way. However, I always give a handout, so my handout is a visual aid, and I'll talk more about why I give handouts later next week. But, yeah, I mean, PowerPoint can be a crutch, but it can also be a good visual aid tool. I think it all depends how you use it. Good. Okay, folks, so next week we are going to work on, hopefully you have completed your outline. That is what I encourage you to do, is complete that outline of your talk and fill in with the appropriate anecdotes and stories to time chunk it out, right, to your basic length. And so that when you're done, you may even be able to title it so that next week we can write a synopsis. I'll teach you how to do that. I'll talk about the tools you want to have in your speaker toolbox, how much to charge, whether to charge, where to charge. I've given you some useful forms and templates that we'll go over, and then the very important how to promote your coaching to enroll clients. That is my favorite thing to teach you because this is really what it's about in my eyes, is making sure you can get clients as a result of these speaking gigs. So I look forward to session 2. We shall see you then. Have a good one.
Good night.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.